Here we go. Welcome to the Transform with Travel podcast, where we share stories of personal transformation and life lessons through our experiences of traveling and exploring the world. Travel is the ultimate accelerator for personal growth, and it can be the root catalyst for the pivots and plot twists we make in our lives. I'm your host, Kelly Tolliday, and it's my mission to inspire you to live life to its fullest, travel with an open mind and heart, and let the world show you a new perspective. I'm so grateful you're here with us today, so let's dive right in. Happy exploring. All right, here we go. Welcome to the Transform with Travel podcast. I am so excited to have my friend David on the podcast today. We met about 3 years ago now, I believe, 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago now, actually. And down in the Florida Keys, our friend Jenna brought a group of people together to be on the board of her nonprofit at the time. And we had our board meeting down in her family home in the Florida Keys. So it was quite an awesome board meeting to be a part of, going kayaking and watching the sunset and having a really great time. So it was great to meet you there. And I'd love to just open it up to you and tell our listeners who you are and what you've been up to.
Yeah, that was definitely a great time and a great opportunity to meet some amazing people. Congratulations, by the way, on launching this podcast. It's a great feat.
Thank you.
I'm honored to be a part of it. Yes, my name is David O'Connor. I originally grew up on Long Island in New York and spent a lot of time in Prince Edward Island, Canada. So kind of had juxtapositions of understanding what it meant to grow up in two different places. And that was really formative in terms of understanding that the reality that I was experiencing in my day-to-day wasn't necessarily the reality that everybody experienced, and really opened my mind to questioning things and to recognizing that we can recreate and create if we want to. But I ended up going to Providence College, studied public and community service with the focus on sustainable community development, it's a mouthful, and had the opportunity to travel a lot in college. Anytime there was a college course that took me abroad, I went. I went to Ecuador, Nicaragua. In graduate school, I went to Dominican Republic and Haiti and explored the relationships between those two countries. And then I got to study abroad with the International School of Training. I went to India, Senegal, and Argentina. So, and when I was in high school, I went to Israel for Project Understanding, which was a Jewish and Catholic partnership to help people cross religious boundaries and get to know each other and their roots and the commonalities that exist. So I've been kind of all over the place. I typically would say that I am a resource person in terms of trying to reallocate resources, encourage people and communities to better utilize resources. Examples of that have been, I co-founded the Friar Food Rescue, which was part of the Food Recovery Network. And that was around rescuing food from being thrown out on college campuses. So I did a lot of stuff around homelessness, and people were labeling me like, oh, the guy who works on homelessness initiatives. But really, it's really just connecting those resources and elevating the work that we do so that we can alleviate suffering and have fun doing it.
Wow, that's incredible. And so I guess it's a two-parter, but was the passion for sustainable work and social good, was that first, or did traveling come first? Like, how did the two get to marry together so seamlessly?
Yeah, it's a great question. When I'm thinking about it, I really think that it was a combination of just the way I was raised. So volunteering was never really a word that we used growing up. We just did it. It wasn't like, hey, we're going to go volunteer next month or this weekend. My dad grew up like was a volunteer firefighter. My mom was actively involved as a nurse in different initiatives. So it was just part of our life. You know, if somebody needed help, we would help and show up. And then growing up, I was privileged to have a family that understood the importance of traveling. And we would do low-cost trips. We'd stay at motels up and down the East Coast. My mom would pack sandwiches. We'd go grocery shopping when we got to our destination. You know, occasionally we'd go out to eat, but it was really about just being on the road together and getting to experience, you know, the world in the present moment and move beyond the history books. So I did a ton of traveling around like Civil War sites. We used to call it the Dead President's Tour, going to all these presidents' homes. And, you know, and then I also have family in Ireland. So that was really important that we would go over there. But things got more expensive. And that's part of the reason why we started going to Prince Edward Island, Canada, because it had a lot of Irish culture, but it was a lot more affordable for us. And yeah, I was just grateful that my mom would, you know, she always questions when I say this because she thinks it sounds like a bad mother, but I think it's one of the best things she did. She would pull me out of school for like a couple of days. And, you know, maybe it was like a Thanksgiving break, but instead of, you know, we take the whole week off, right? And she'd always ask the teachers in advance, hey, any schoolwork that like myself or my sister Mary Alice were going to miss, can you just put it together in a packet? And it ended up never being a lot of work. So
right.
I was always amazed, like, wow, like the quality of experience that I'm getting on the road with my family and going to these museums and stuff, I'm learning a lot more than sitting in the classroom. So I'm not saying like don't go to school, but I think it was a privilege to be able to have a combination of both, because then when I was learning about things in the classroom, I was able to reflect back on those experiences and they made them more enriching.
Yeah. And so you mentioned a lot of pretty formative trips growing up in high school and in college. Were there any like one particular trip or a set of particular trips that really cemented to you, like, this is going to be a part of who I am and what I set out to do with my life?
It's a great question. I think I always say that they kind of build upon each other. So having traveled with my family early on, like we'd be in long car rides. So growing up in New York and going to Canada was a 15-hour car ride and we'd do it in a day sometimes. So I'm very comfortable. Tonight I'm actually flying to Abu Dhabi. It's like a 16-hour or something commute and I'm not even like fazed by it, which has become really, really helpful. Yeah, so I would say the first, and going to Ireland was, you know, formative. I got to go to a couple of schools and spend a couple of days in Ireland to experience like what it's like going to school in Ireland. And my first trip without my family was going to Israel. So that was like a major step. What is it like to travel in a group with people my age? And then I think study abroad was sort of that next level, right? So and particularly going to three different countries in 3 months and very different countries. Every day felt like a week, the level of just work that we were doing. And I loved, I think that's what I loved, just like truly living each day to the fullest. And when I'm home sometimes, I mean, it's important to rest, don't get me wrong, but sometimes I'm like, I don't feel like I've fully embraced the day. Like, so trying to find that balance. And it's interesting, like time, my understanding of time can shift when I'm traveling or when I'm back home.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. There's actually studies that talk about how when we're in new situations, whether it's traveling or whether it's just a different situation in your life, like you're going camping for the first time or you go to a different park, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be something super big, but time in your mind, the perception of time actually slows down because you're taking in so much new information that like an hour might seem like a full day instead of, you know, the days going by so quickly when you're at home. So it is a bit of a balance of like needing that routine for your own physical and mental health, but also craving that novelty. And someone who's an avid traveler, I'm sure you can understand this as, like, I always feel like this pull to constantly be doing something new, but then there's so much value in also being consistent with your daily habits and your community. So it's a tricky balance for sure to maintain. So you mentioned Ireland. And so I love Ireland. Where in Ireland is your family from?
So my O'Connor, my last name, my grandparents are from Kerry down south. And then my mom's sister married a guy from Ireland. So I actually have four cousins that were raised in Northern Ireland.
Thanks.
Yeah, and Derry. So it's been awesome to have both like the bloodline connection and then like actual first cousins growing up there.
Yeah. Kerry and Derry. Yeah, there you go. Well, that's amazing. Okay, so you've talked a little bit about this like thread that's been woven into your family life, your family culture of not just volunteering, but it being a part of who you are and wanting to, you know, make an impact in your life. Can you talk a little bit about how since, you know, flying from the nest and being able to make your own impact outside of your family, what's been the journey? And you mentioned your introduction into building impact and building organizations around homelessness and food shortages and resources like that. Since college, where has that taken you now?
Yeah. So I think one of the things I've always been fortunate about is that my trips tend to be very intentional. People will be like, oh, are they mission trips? And I don't typically call them mission trips because they're not necessarily like evangelical. Even though I have a master's degree in theology and ministry and interfaith work and spirituality is really important to me, I try to show up more in the sense of like, how do I get to know the community? And I think religion is really important. Like, I'm going to the Middle East tonight. For me to not engage in the Islamic culture would basically be like, I haven't actually arrived to that community. So I think that I go with the mind of how can I be present in this community and be open to sharing gifts and skill sets and ideas with them to enhance, right? So sometimes I'm fairly comfortable engaging with people who are of the homeless population, struggling with a drug addiction, to the point where often I'm in situations in other cities where I just happen to be giving like some piece of food or something or acknowledging somebody. And to me, it doesn't feel like a big deal, but I've had people that I travel with who are not accustomed to that have said that that's helped them sort of reimagine their role in society and how they engage in community. So I'm grateful, like these are lessons that I've learned from other people. And I'm grateful that one, that they share that because we don't always get to notice like the impact or the influence that we have. And it's great to see that, like, you know, and I've seen people that typically would want to help somebody out, not know kind of their role. And because I've traveled with them, they'll report back like, oh, you know, I bought this kid some diapers for his baby brother or something like that. So it's kind of neat to see that it doesn't always have to be like building organizations, but how do we just give people permission to be who they want to be truly, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that often we're holding ourselves back. But yeah, I would say every trip is really about how can I leverage the privilege that I have to sort of honor the fact that not everybody can be in these places. I mean, for a variety of reasons. I'm massively privileged to be a US citizen. I'll critique this country to the day that I die. But I'm very, very grateful and very conscious of the fact that I have a US passport. And that gives me access to almost every country in the world. You know, I have friends and people that I'm part of, communities that I'm a part of, where they have to apply, if they can even apply. Sometimes they're not even eligible for visas, but often they have to plan a trip, you know, a year out. I often can book a flight the day, a week before, which in of itself is such a privilege. So for me, it's something that I really think about and I've been torn about, but it's like, no, like I think it's important to recognize that and then to leverage that. So for me, trying to go to these communities, trying to learn, like represent, like I went to Oman, Muscat, Oman in the Middle East, which most people in the United States don't even know is the country and the city, right? And it was for an event called Shape MENA, which is Middle East, North Africa. And growing up in New York, I think the Middle Eastern community is very misunderstood, particularly around 9/11. And it was really a privilege to be able to show up to that community and learn the, like, regionally what's going on. And my mind's expanded, my relationships are developed. And then I feel like I can become a better advocate. So like in my own city, we have people of Middle Eastern descent, right? Any region that I go to, for the most part, we have individuals from. So it just gives me that ability to connect on a more deeper level to the people around me, you know, because I can talk about a neighborhood that they know, or they'll be like, oh, did you try such, you know, such and such food? So it just breaks the ice on a more meaningful way instead of just like a head nod or something like. And that's something that I didn't anticipate, I think, when I was traveling, but I've been sort of addicted to.
Yeah. And I really appreciate when you said really being present with the community that you're going in and trying to help in some way and not just saying, oh, they need this, this, and this. It's asking, what do you need or what do you want? Like that little, your friend who bought the little boy diapers for his brother, instead of saying, oh, you actually need food, the little boy was probably like, I need diapers. And it's like, okay, I'm gonna get you diapers. Like, it's being present with the community and being present with what they actually need rather than what we think that they need. And so I think that was a really powerful point that you had made. This episode is sponsored by Rising Nature Retreats. Are you feeling called to explore the world, tick off your bucket list, and make lifelong friends along the way? Are you overwhelmed from planning the logistics of your trips or sick of feeling like you need a vacation from your vacation when you return home? Rising Nature Retreats offers world-class travel experiences infused with daily yoga and wellness, personal development workshops, unique adventure and cultural excursions, and holistic local cuisines. Experience the world as you elevate your wellness. Return home feeling rejuvenated and empowered to bring what you learn about other cultures and about yourself back home with you. This is the adventure you've been waiting for. Join us in 2024 to explore Thailand, Portugal, or Greece. Visit risingnatureretreats.com or at Rising Nature Retreats on Instagram and Facebook for all the brochures and information on upcoming international retreats and local classes and events in South Florida. So one of the communities and one of the organizations that you're with is with the Global Shaper Community. Can you explain a little bit about what that is and the impact that it's been creating and your direct influence in that?
Definitely. So this community has been life-changing in so many ways, and I've been leading hard into it, especially recently. So the Global Shaper Community is an initiative of the World Economic Forum. A lot of people may have heard of the World Economic Forum through the context of an event that happens every January called Davos, where world leaders from the private and public sectors come together. There's a lot of pros, a lot of cons in that event. But Professor Klaus Schwab, who is the head of the World Economic Forum and founder, he realized that there was no young people sitting at the table. And in the research that the forum does, they had recognized that half of the world is actually 27 or younger.
Wow.
So to have fit half of the world not represented is pretty crazy. So about maybe 11 plus years ago, they created these hubs called Global Shaper Hubs, and it was entirely volunteer-based. And the role was to have all volunteers across different sectors. They could be unemployed, they could be in college, you know, they could be the city council member, whatever, you know, anything representative of the city. But that they were committed to improving the state of the world, both diving into their city and being open to sharing that insight and that information and the wisdom to other communities across this hub network. So I was privileged. A friend of mine from college who was a member told me about it in 2016. And I was like, this is totally like up my alley, but I had some other stuff going on. And it's very rare for me to pause an opportunity, but for that one, right. I actually did. And the next year they followed back up with me and I was like, you know what, like, let's do it. So I got involved and it was kind of interesting because there's what they call a curator, which is the head of the hub each year. And part of this is about leadership development. So they have a new leader for each hub every year, which there's pros and cons about that as well. And myself and Marie Ann Hobeka, who's a fellow shaper now living in LA, she became a shaper when I did. And about a month and a half in, when our curator was supposed to go to Geneva to represent our hub, we found out that she was accepted to the Peace Corps, which is an amazing opportunity, but that meant that she could no longer represent our hub. So Marie Ann ended up having to represent the hub, only having been a shaper for like a month. And so she came back and was trying to just figure out how to explain all this amazing stuff that I just experienced. And about 4 months later, we had to start an election process that would then, like, you start an election process in like January, February, and then you shift the leadership the following July. So we had nobody else. So there was like me and one other person, and they're like, Dave, like, we need you to be the curator. So I accepted. I was like, I got an opportunity to go to Geneva. Amazing. But I discovered after I became the curator that there was an event in Sacramento for North America and the Caribbean. And it was booked out. There was no more space. And I had been, my first international or really true relationship with the Shaper community was when I was in Copenhagen. So I'd followed back up with these Copenhagen Shapers who I had been in their own hub retreat when I was there. And I said, hey, I have a predicament. I'm supposed to be leading this Rhode Island hub and there's no seats for Rhode Island to be at the table. And this is all about being at the table. So like, what do I do?
Right.
And my friend Lena goes, just show up. So I literally just showed up, which organizers are not going to appreciate this.
Yeah, they're not too happy about that.
But I showed up with the idea that like, I'm there to help. Like, it's not about me. It's about learning. Right. And the leader of that community at the time, I slept on his couch that first night. Sure enough, some people couldn't make the event. So I ended up, you know, being able to step up and fill in spots. And it was game changing, you know, recognizing all of the people across these different sectors. Then I ended up going to Shape Europe, which was in Belfast a couple months later, which for me, having Irish ties and—
Yeah, I was going to say that's like perfect for you to go back.
Exactly. And it being focused around at the time, England leaving the EU, right? Which Ireland, is, you know, Brexit was heavily chaotic for the Northern Irish and Irish border. So that was amazing. And then went to Geneva. And by the time I went to Geneva, even though I'd been a shaper for less than a year, essentially, I knew a bunch of people. So it kind of elevated my ability. So long story short, I kept trying to go to these events. COVID happened. Our hub, unfortunately, died down. We had a lot of people that come to Rhode Island that just stay for a couple of years through Brown University and other universities. And they closed the hub down. And I had this moment of like, where am I? Am I a shaper still? Am I not a shaper? And I reached out and said, can I restart the hub? And they said, sure. So this past year, I have been committed to continue to represent the hub, to continue to learn and leverage these relationships. But right now, really focused on impact. So when I thought about restarting the hub, there was primarily two things. It was one, if I don't continue the hub, all of those relationships that I built, it's going to be like for nothing. Like at that point, it's just for me, right? And I really was like, I want young Rhode Islanders to have the capacity and the ability to travel and to have the resources they need to accomplish the dreams and the vision that they have for the state and the city. And the second one was to just give the voice to Rhode Island. Like we're the smallest state in the country. There's people in the United States that don't even know Rhode Island is a state, let alone like on an international level, right? So if this is truly about voices and representation, you know, for me to consciously make a decision to shut that down, I felt it would just be like disgraceful to anybody that's ever assisted me in this community. So yeah, so I've leaned in and I'm flying to Abu Dhabi tonight to go to Shape Middle East, North Africa. I'm supposed to be going to Bilbao for Shape Europe and then Riohasa in Colombia. And what we're doing from an impact standpoint is actually I partnered with a friend of mine who I also met through traveling at a men's retreat. He had tithed during COVID. He typically would save money and bring it to a church. And he said, you know, I want to like put money into account and have a higher impact. So we collaborated and he's developed a foundation called the Humble King Foundation, which is focusing on water, shelter, and education. And we're partnering with the Shaper community because we can identify low cost, high impact projects. In the United States, like money just does not go far. It's, you know, we were able to fund a $6,000 water well that's giving 200 plus people access to potable water. You know, you can't, $6,000 for the most part in the US is just not going as far as.
That doesn't even cover the electricity bill anymore per year. So that's what's crazy. Yeah.
Exactly. So for me, I'm excited to leverage these relationships and, you know, now we're going to, the Columbia one is again about going representing Rhode Island, continue to build these relationships, but actually hopefully doubling the amount of water filters that we'll be able to provide. I have a meeting tonight before I fly out about that, you know, but it's like enough talk. It's like, I appreciate the talk. I appreciate the relationships, but now it's time to take action and being really adamant about that while we recruit.
Wow. So just in the past, you know, 20 minutes or so that we've been talking, you've mentioned that you're leaving for Abu Dhabi later tonight. You told me backstage that you just got back from Washington, D.C. last night. As we were trying to schedule this interview, you were like, yes, I'd love to, but I just got back from Brazil and now I'm heading to the Amazon and then I go to Montana. Like you were all over the place. So on top of the impact that you're creating and you have such a connection to your bigger why, which I think is so important and seems like such a driving force for who you are, how do you keep yourself feeling like you have the vitality and you have the energy to keep doing all these things. Because on top of all the social good and the amazing experiences, just traveling for fun and the connections that you build, you're also a part of a hurling team, which is a sport that not many people will have heard of. And you're also doing so many other things. So how do you keep yourself feeling this vital energy to keep moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is relationships. So hurling from an athletic standpoint has kept me physically challenging myself to stay fairly fit. And this year alone, like I lost 40 pounds. I did the 75 hard.
I saw that. It was incredible.
And I was able to actually play hurling on a high level at the World Games in Ireland this year. So it was amazing. And I appreciated particularly the team down in Atlanta, which I ended up transferring and playing with. Just the support that they had. I don't think people truly understand how far like offering somebody a couch goes. Like this, none of this happens. All these stories, all these, you know, moments of impact or connection, they truly do not happen if I do not get the love and support of people locally and internationally. Like, and that can't be underestimated. One couch saves me on average over $100. Like that's for one mm-hmm. night. Right. So you add that up, how many couches I've slept on or guest rooms or whatnot. It's thousands of dollars. Right. And I think that's a testament to when I was growing up and in terms of like staying in these motels, it was just like, it's not about for me. It's not about like if I have a roof over my head, I'm grateful. Right. And I actually personally would rather stay with people because there's that extra magic that happens when you're having those conversations, like those late night conversations or those early morning conversations where you're like, you don't really want to get outside and get dressed or whatever, but you're like making tea or, you know, eggs or something like that. And you're just having those conversations. Whereas like, if I'm staying in a hotel, you know, it's like, oh, like I got to go travel 20 minutes to get to the hotel. And then I wake up and, you know, I have no idea what city I'm in because all hotels mm-hmm. are the same. Right. So there's like a beautiful like aspect to that. Like hospitality. Yeah, I think it's a forgotten art and virtue and value, particularly in the United States. You know, I think there's when I was in Senegal, they had a new hotel and local Senegalese people were genuinely confused by this concept of a hotel. They're like, wait, so you're coming to visit and you're going to pay money to stay in another place? Right. Because they're so communal. And you know, and that's something that I've appreciated is getting to experience like what does that word hospitality mean on a local level. So yeah, so in terms of like how does this happen and how do I stay grounded, it's first recognizing and practicing gratitude. And I try to do something to demonstrate that. So whether it's taking somebody out for dinner or writing them a thank you note or buying them a houseplant or like something that's intentional to just get myself to be present in that moment of this doesn't happen without that individual. And then hurling, what's beautiful about that community is I can pretty much find this underground community all around the world. So I've gone to trainings in Paris. Argentina has a club that's been around for 101 years. So I've trained with them on a couple times. Domestically, I'm hopping into trainings. And that does a couple of things. Again, it allows me to learn about communities, to become more grounded in that community, but then to get physical fitness, you know, and physical fitness is so essential for mental health and it can be daunting. There's moments where, particularly in the transition, where it's like, I know I'm supposed to still be somewhere, but I'm supposed to be making some sort of shift. And that could be a shift of moving to another city or whatnot. There can be sort of moments of being lost, feeling lost, right? And that ability to go for a run or do a training is with other people is really magical.
Yeah. And it's almost like when you can get a little lost in your own head of, you know, that anxiety of what's next or what's to come, or I don't quite know what the next step is, being in your physical body and moving your physical body helps kind of bring you back into the present moment. At least that's my experience with movement. 100%. It also helps when you're traveling to help with jet lag and the time zones and kind of getting yourself onto that time. G'day mates from the land down under. Just kidding. I'm right here in South Florida enjoying a true blue Aussie coffee, pastry, and meat pie at my absolute favorite cafe here in South Florida, Bite and Coffee. That's BYTE and Coffee, located in Lighthouse Point. Biting Coffee is owned and managed by the absolute best couple from Down Under, Dan and Kat, who moved to South Florida from Melbourne, Australia with the dream of bringing the incredible Aussie cafe culture to the States. As someone who's lived in Australia for 5 years, I surely do miss my Aussie flat white coffee, brekkie buns, and sausage rolls. But what I miss more is the sense of community when you step inside your favorite cafe. You know that feeling when you walk in and they already know your order and it's ready to go? Yeah, that kind of feeling. Biting Coffee brings the good vibes, delicious food and coffee, and the true sense of family. I can bring my little girls for breakfast and know that they are welcomed. If you're living in South Florida or just visiting and passing by, I highly recommend heading over to Biting Coffee and grabbing a coffee with your breakfast or lunch, or even checking out their incredible wine and beer selection with a delicious charcuterie board at night. It's the perfect spot for a catch up with a friend or a business meeting. As a special gift to listeners, when you order at Bite, be sure to mention Transform with Travel for 10% off your order. So go ahead and check it out. Bite and Coffee, located in Lighthouse Point.
So you've mentioned this word community a lot in this episode. You can see that it's just like the thing that's giving you oxygen is having really special, meaningful relationships with people in your community at home, but also having this global community of friends around the world. And we hear, especially in marketing now, we hear this word community getting thrown around a lot. I know me and my business partner, Chloe, we talk about our Rising Nature Retreats family and how important it is to create connection with our community. And sometimes we have to sit back and say, okay, what does this word actually mean to us? Because it's really easy for brands. It's like a big buzzword right now is come for the community, come for this, come for that. Sure. And it's like, okay, what does it actually mean to be a part of a community? And so I'd love to ask you, what does that word, what does that concept of community mean to you?
It's a fantastic question. I think for me, it's fundamentally about, it's beyond a group, right? It's a place that you can show up, be vulnerable, know that you are going to be both accepted, that you are going to be given the benefit of the doubt. So even if you're saying something or processing something that's controversial, that people are with you in that growth moment and they're not trying to jump at you and down your throat, but they're like, no, this is part of the growth and get it out, right? And that there's also a level of accountability, you know? And I think like when I think about who, I call a lot of people friends and I probably overuse the term because I genuinely think that like if somebody needs help, like I'm going to help them out. Right. And that's what I consider to be a friend. But the capacity to hold somebody accountable is really, really a gift. And there's a difference when people are trying to hold somebody accountable because it doesn't fit for their agenda and the time where they're holding them accountable because they actually truly know what that person is capable of. And I've been really grateful that there's people that, even though my lifestyle may be different from theirs and there's things that they may not understand, that they understand my core or my soul on such a level that they can like free me to do what I need to do. Cause I've had those conversations with people that don't get it. And it's just, I know it's bad advice because it's just not, they're not holding me accountable in the real way that I need to be. And I think that to have that level of community, it's truly a gift. And it's been hard. Like, you know, I live in Rhode Island. I went to college here. After everybody left, I was still in the city and I worked for a really small company. It was a Christian ministry. There's about 4 staff members in my location. So the volunteers were like my community, you know? So when I go to other cities and I see like the level of young professionals, I'm just like, this is amazing energy.
Right.
So the Shaper community has, in a lot of ways, just like saved me. There's been times where I've had vision for projects or like what we're capable of accomplishing. And I've been around like negativity, you know? And when I'm around these individuals that are, you know, everyone's being challenged in their own way. Everyone's navigating quote unquote failures and successes. But when they are of that growth mindset, you know, and really willing to hear people out, it doesn't get any better than that, you know? And I think it's unfortunate. Like we live, particularly in the US, in a very isolated world. That's why we suffer from some of the highest mental health issues, in my opinion, in the world. And drug addiction is rampant. Like I actually, when I'm flying home to the US, I sense the anxiety just crossing the Atlantic. Oh. It is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had to become conscious of it. and set boundaries because I noticed it was affecting me. And I've had friends say like, oh, when you're physically in Providence, you're a different person. Like on the phone, it's like a different energy, you know? And I think that first step is awareness. And if you know that it's happening, then you can set those boundaries and not get caught up in the negativity, you know? And it's not saying, I think a lot of people when they say don't get caught up in the negativity, it's like a perception of running from conflict. But I think it's more of leaning into things that are like, understand there's going to be conflict for growth, right? Every plant has to break through the soil to elevate. But there's a difference between that and being fed toxic water, mm-hmm. right? So recognizing the difference of, you know, is this just a growth moment and I got to kind of be resilient and push through? Or am I literally being fed stuff that's going to like douse me?
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate the sentiment around isolation being such a big factor in around mental health here in the US. I think that's so true. I was just talking to a friend on the podcast who had lived in Cameroon for a while. She's on the podcast. Her name is Madison Bailey Mangenge. And she was living in Cameroon. And she was like, one of the biggest differences is just how isolated, how nuclear families and people are living here in the US. That was one of the hardest mm-hmm. things for her, was moving back here and realizing how isolated everyone actually was and how sad that made her and how much vibrant, rich life there was to be living in these communal environments like she was living in the village in Cameroon. And so I really loved when you said a community is a space where you can be healing and processing, and maybe you say something that is a little controversial because you are in that healing process and someone's not going to turn around and immediately cancel you. Like they're there to help you during that process. You know? Like this cancel culture of like, oh, you're gone. And yeah, there's, and on the flip side of that, there's the accountability where if that person is repeatedly saying offensive things or repeatedly doing things that aren't in line with the community's values, then that's where you turn around and you say, hey, I'm here to support you during this, like, do you need some help? And so I really appreciate the two sides of that coin there. You mentioned that you were talking about some of the people in the Global Shaper community and about how everyone's going through their own versions of challenges and within their own communities, within the impact they're trying to create. And just backstage, you were telling me how, you know, they're being on this global stage in a social impact sphere can come with its own sets of challenges. So can you talk a little bit about what those challenges are for you and how you consistently continue to show up even though there are roadblocks? Because this is not easy work to be going into.
Yeah, I think so. Like that first time I stood at the World Economic Forum in Geneva and there was about 200 people from 150 plus countries, I remember pausing and just realizing how unbelievable that was. That in that moment, from that moment on, I had access to the entire world. And it was something, most people were speaking English and stuff like that. So it was almost easy to like not recognize that, right? It's around young professionals. Everyone's speaking for the most part the same language, lots of accents, right? But it's something that I've really leaned into. And I think that when I'm talking to these other community members, I'm constantly being reminded of, I mean, the privileges that I have, right? And there are shapers who have been refugees, right? There's actually a refugee camp that has a hub, you know, so they're not even recognized as a formal community. We have shapers in Russia. We have shapers in Ukraine. We had shapers in Venezuela. We have shapers in Palestine and Israel. There's people who are, you know, on social media and stuff, and there's a lot of stuff to share. And it becomes really interesting to navigate when you have genuinely developed relationships and friendships with people on all sides. And I'm grateful that this community, for the most part, is really open to hearing people out. And as I mentioned, like with that sense of what does community mean, at least for me, it's that like trusting that people are inherently good and that they have good intentions. Right. And understanding that we're not making all these decisions ourselves. I remember I was in an event with somebody from Afghanistan, again, being from New York growing up. And I had a conversation about that. What was it like growing up in Afghanistan in the early 2000s? You know, and that was a kind of a really powerful conversation because I wasn't having that conversation with anybody else. We were hardly even talking about it. Right. Like we're not consciously thinking about these are other human beings on the other side with different stories and different narratives. So it's been, you know, it's challenging because it's easier to just rant, right? You know, just to be like down with Israel or down with Palestine, whatever you want to say, right? It's easy for people just to stand behind their computer. But when you're putting faces to these issues and recognizing that there are vulnerable people on all sides of these communities that are getting attacked, you know, and ultimately, like, that's what this is about. How do we support those individuals and educate ourselves and start to break away this complex web? And then for me personally, I think, I mean, mine is a little different, but I actually kind of joke about this, but I'm a white straight guy from a Christian background, Catholic, you know, who is college educated from the United States of America, right? So I show up in these spaces and there are perceptions, like 100%. Right. I was just talking about this last night in DC, because I actually had a shaper who was just like, oh, we thought you were like a completely different person when you showed up, and now that we're actually having conversations, they're like, I am so, like, you know, I don't know the correct word that they said, but surprised, I guess, as to like what I do and what I've done, et cetera. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I was like, I understand that. I'm become aware of that. And just like it's not a black person's job to prove XYZ or a Muslim person to prove XYZ, be who you are and let other people come to realize that. And recognize if there's a disconnect, it's like, oh, they just don't know me right now. So there was a time in Geneva, we were at the end of this event. So we all had like a little tribe of people from the different world and like a small group. And we were doing this pinning ceremony. And they were saying like, Dave, like, thanks for showing up and being present and listening to people. And I made a joke. I was like, I know the bar as a white straight guy from the US is pretty low. And they all started laughing. Because they were like, yeah, it is. Like, and then I was pinning the next person and I made a joke. I was like, to the African queen, who, when I asked her which hub she was representing, she told me Africa, right? And she was dying because she genuinely believed that as a US person, right, that I wouldn't know Namibia as a country. Right. Mm. So it's just kind of, it's just funny. Right. And
yeah.
And I enjoyed those moments, right. That it's like, we don't take it personally. We just sort of recognize that, yeah, it's a stereotype that's fairly accurate. Most people don't know African countries, but like, how do we create space again to not judge those individuals and recognize that we're not learning about those countries in school, you know? And if you're living in a community that's like, there's a lot of reasons you wouldn't just come up with that information. Mm-hmm. So I think those are like some of the challenges. I mean, there's financial challenges for sure. I'm leaning into this community and it's not free. It's relatively affordable for what it is. And it's all volunteer, but there's a level of faith that I'm leaning into. I'm treating it as like, even from an impact standpoint, that if I'm starting a business, there's going to be moments where you're going to put a lot of energy, a lot of resources into it. So for me, it's like, if I'm trying to elevate in my capacity for impact, I have to be willing to make some sacrifices. Mm. And I'm fortunate, I'm starting to see a shift in that where people are starting to step up and say like, hey, you know, we'll pay for your flight or something like that. Cause I've run out of air miles at this point, you know, and I'm really grateful for that because I'm not good at asking for help. I think for me, because travel is such a beautiful thing and a privilege, it feels like a conflict of interest for me to say like, hey, can you pay for my flight? But to hear people on the other side and be like, well, this project doesn't happen if you're not physically going there is really like, I'm grateful for that because I think it's easy to kind of get in our heads and recognize. And this goes for, I mean, most entrepreneurs, right? When you're doing something you're passionate about and you're like, oh, like with, you know, I'd do this for free, right?
Exactly.
You know, like how do you shift that?
So yeah. Recognizing your own value and the places and the spaces that you're inserting yourself and whichever vertical that is in entrepreneurship or global impact, social good. So just to wrap up, if someone was listening and's like, where is this Global Shaper community? I want to know more. How can people, is it like an application process? Like how do people get involved with it?
Yeah. So if you go on Google and search Global Shapers and then the name of the biggest city, I would say around you. Then there typically will come up a page with which also demonstrates who is actually involved at the moment and it has LinkedIn profiles. So you can get a sense of like who's in the community. And then at the bottom is there's an application process. And every hub has different application processes, but that is at least the starting point.
Okay.
So they would just fill out that form and then they would be notified that you're interested.
Okay. And
people can reach out to me directly. Again, I'm representing Rhode Island Providence, but I'm looking to build a community all around the world. So I'm happy to connect people to individuals as well.
I get the sense that you're building a community all around the world. So I love that so much. So we always finish these questions, these interviews with rapid fire questions to finish with. So number one is, if you could only go back to one country or place in the world, where would it be and why?
We'll say Ireland, because it's the Celtic spirit. It just grounds me like no other place.
Absolutely. I love it there too. I don't know if you know this, but I met my husband in Dublin. So we've been back to Ireland and we love it so, so much there. So we have a special place in our heart there too. So then number two is, what's next on your bucket list? I know you're literally going to Abu Dhabi tonight, but what's number one on your bucket list right now?
Yeah, I would say for me, it's just really getting some stuff in order. So actually my house is on the market. I'm in a massive transition space.
Oh, wow.
Trying to recognize, how do I build teams? How do I lean into my skill sets? How do I say no? And my no is somebody else's yes. So really just being okay with recognizing that I can't do everything.
Absolutely.
And making some big shifts.
Stepping up into the next level, for sure. And then number three is, what's the biggest life lesson you've learned while traveling?
People are inherently good. There's a lot of talk in the world. Just in DC the other day, I was talking to somebody that's in New Jersey and they're like, we heard there's tanks rolling in. And I'm like, I'm looking around and I'm pretty sure I don't see any tanks rolling in. So I think it's just crazy how, you know, we're constantly preaching fear, but there's a lot of amazing travelers out there, that both men and women, who are constantly saying the world is inherently good. And if you are leaning into that good energy, you know, unfortunately things do happen, but I don't think that you're more high risk traveling than your own city. You know, like I'm actually, it's very frustrating to me, because when I'm out of Providence, there's been times where every week I'm seeing a Facebook notification about somebody getting shot and killed.
Yeah.
And it's just so disheartening to see the violence that exists in my own city and people at the same time questioning like why we're traveling other places. So I would just say, yeah, the greatest lesson is like people are willing to help, people are willing to step up. And I mean, there's been countless moments where people have just come out of the woodwork and assisted myself or other people in times of trouble and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually one of my core beliefs as well, is that people are inherently good. And I remember when we were going to live in Thailand and go travel around Southeast Asia, we got a lot of questions like, is it safe? Do you what's the crime like? What about this? What about that? And I'm like, we live in Miami. Do you even know what's happening? Like one street over from here, like it's one of the most violent cities in America. It's crazy how people's perception of home and people's perception of something that's different to home or a different culture can be so vastly different. But I honestly believe that what you seek is what you find for the most part. And so if you're seeking out the good in people, then 9 times out of 10, you're going to see that back. And so always giving people the benefit of the doubt the most, as much as possible. So I really appreciate that. And then the last one is, if you could give advice to an aspiring explorer, someone who wants to get out there and see the world but hasn't quite done it yet, what would you say to them?
I would say, don't let money be an obstacle. There's so many cost-effective ways to travel if you're open to it. And I've had people who say that who have $100,000 kitchens. And I'm like, like, you can travel, you just choose not to, or your perception of what traveling means is different. And, you know, skip the $300 a night hotels, stay in a, you know, $30 hostel, because it's worth it. Build your travel backbone, you know?
Right. I like that.
It's like the true authentic, if you can't stay in a hostel, then you will always be missing out part of the country. And I'm not saying that you have to be living in hostels your entire life, but you need to at least have a resiliency to, when push comes to shove, sleep in that kind of environment and not be thinking it's going to be the end of your life.
Totally. Yeah, I like that. The travel backbone. I've never heard that before. I like that a lot. Well, thank you so, so much. If people listening and they want to connect with you online, what's the best spaces for them to be able to do that?
Yeah, I would say feel free to share my email. It's doconnor127@gmail.com. Instagram is Dave Abroad, DaveAbroad, which I was deemed when I was studying abroad because they said I was so abroad. But yeah, I think those are the best ways. Would love to connect and happy to be a resource and talk about anything. They can reach out to me on LinkedIn, but right now I'm not super active with responding, but if they want to connect there too.
Yeah. So email and Instagram, best place to find you. Thank you so, so much. I've loved reconnecting with you again. This has been so fun. And now that I know so much more about you and your journey, I'm even more excited to see where your journey takes you. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Really, again, super grateful to reconnect and have this timestamp because I know even in 3 months, my life's going to be in a different place.
100%. 100%. Good one to go back to.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Transform with Travel podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode of inspiration, adventure, and exploration. If you felt inspired by this episode, please rate and review in whatever streaming app you're listening from. This allows us to spread the word even more and continue to serve up weekly doses of adventure. As always, we'd love if you could share the episode with someone in your life who you think will benefit from this conversation. Thanks so much for listening. This is your reminder to get out there and keep on exploring.